Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I am going to read three or four.
No, these are short poems.
On the wave, I live on the wave. I learn to speak words and monologues. I am the song of all the seasons, the ships, all sailors. I like memories between night and day, night and dream coming down on me, the blue flower forest. I draw stones at the crest of the wave. Maybe I miss you. The fish are searching for the bank. Under the shade of the trees, I want to catch only one. It slips from my hands. I draw stones at you, my childhood. I think you know. Maybe for you, last poem. The lost heaven. I extended my hands to encompass you. The arm now days through me. A solid idea from a reservoir of things. I look in the mirror and I desire in its depth you and Angel. psychology.
Thanks very much, Constantine. Thanks, Amelia. And if everyone can keep their contributions now to around 2 minutes, because we have such a full list. The next person on the mic is Catherine Ronan.
This poem is called Magic Tree, or Tree A. Dressed in his life's carpet, shout spent, smile kidnapped. Waiting to be cradled again by mother, or maybe never cradled, just the leaden boot of abandonment. Collared wars that said no. No music to sing, just passing days in evil bush shelters where long bony fingers want to travel down dark corridors, where teeth baring, I will catch you, hide in plain sight. Will anybody plan to kiss in his lonely cotton wool jaws? A seed kiss that could travel and grow 2 candles in his windows so that he can see Cork again as a new child. I pray for magic.
Thanks very much, Catherine. And next up, we have Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Sue. This is quite a serious one. It's called The Redeemer in Death. Out of the block of marble quarried in Carrara, John Hogan has revealed a form of the dead Christ. No sign of blood or blemish on the full-length figure stretched beneath the altar in St. Finbar's South. The elevated torso lets the head fall sideways, while hair drops limply down. By his feet the thorns and nails. All muscle tension gone, exhaustion in the way each limb finds its true length, bearing down into the plank. Yet not a waxy corpse, his finely chiseled features show a man in deep repose. Golgotha, a bad dream. The mystery remains why a being of light and grace would wish to walk among us, shoulder our deepest pain.
I do it every time at the home. The next person we have at the open mic is Charles Clark.
at Whitchurch Canonic Forum, the lady with great reputation, a novelist, Penelope Fitzgerald, attends the morning prayers at 8 o'clock with her friend and publisher.
Thanks very much. Next up is Jerry Murphy.
I had something to read and it changed my mind. You know, Harold Bloom died recently.
Yes.
Somebody knows, isn't it? Don't tell me what.
The first thing is coming up.
No, this is based on an essay called the, really?
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
His essay is called The Anxiety of Influence. And I was very taken with this essay, and I did a version of it, which is called The Anxiety of Influence after Harold Bloom. It's
as a poem that constantly changes its title. Next up, we have Benjamin Burns.
September, I don't want to be moved, not by words. I'd rather listen to the wind in the trees, or chase a kid goat round the garden. Bam, bam, delivery, bam. In the dead of night, the mouse alarm. Life is just constantly needing to go to the toilet. Billie Eilish has it right, it's cool to be half disengaged. But when you sing to me, autumn wind that blows through a human body and out laughing into the rapturous abyss our eyes read into, small words scuttle like mice across the floor of my psyche. I feel like the world is a sweeter, better place. That's when things have gone well.
Thanks, Amelia. Next up, Patricia Walsh, please.
Called The Unusual Question. The slippery talker, diabetic innocence, lubricated by drugs and alcohol regularly, a spectrum of lunacy worn down by necessity, on any given night, fanciful in his execution. The fascistic distance me and them, drinking on concrete for shorter than desire, shunted away by Gardaí for better bearing, is one never existed but to humiliate. The man is utterly insane, funny to a point, insistence on all despite rejection. The little climax never on your watch, and satisfaction is yours alone, likely. Being very good, shift the outdated charges, wishing to legalize everything as state stands. Growing through experience my lot in life, distance of source is my only escape. Repetitive phone calls taken up at last, before an revenge porn ever existed. For that I'm grateful, digital smartphones, paying down whereabouts on any given day. Our seed in you evaporates eventually, the cult of the waster never lost on you. Promising much never deliver, it's been done before, sacrificing apogees of enlightened sense.
Next up, Shona Lee Lynch.
It's bleak out there, people. Global panic about the end of the planet. Brexit and fascists are all that's in fashion. All systems are broken and no one has a clue. It's so depressing just watching the news. It is true, we are on the verge of extinction. Emissions and mass evictions have us in a precarious position. Yet in this epidemic, recreation is imperative to give your amygdala a break and stop worrying, for God's sake. At least for a while, give it a try. Cycle to the Spanish countryside, humming Congolese lullabies. Whatever it is that makes you smile, do that. Then do it some more. Do it until your eyes get sore, then rest your lids, and when you snore, dream of rainbow dinosaurs reciting K-pop love poems to NASCAR drivers and Thunderdomes until you wake up giggling. Don't take things so seriously. There is no script, and the apocalypse is now-ish, so we may as well enjoy it. Let's go lie by the lock, hold hands, take off our socks, and look at flocks flying overhead. Make the grass our bed, share our pillow with the ducks, and remember what it was like to not give a free second of your day to anything other than play. What do you say? Pause all talks of politics, endorse the nonsense. What do you think? We could raise paper ships, eat ketchup, eat chips, do somersaults in the nip until the sun is eclipsed. When the darkness has covered, we'll get out our maracas and shake along with the crickets and frogs, build a house from logs, furnish it with ends and odds, and pretend the floor is lava. There's so much drama and sadness and pain. It's draining, worrying about it, jobs, relationships, the empirical conundrum of existence. Don't get too distressed trying to comprehend philosophy's tests like Zeno's paradox when you could be off playing Xena Warrior Princess, or Power Rangers, or witches, or Ninja Mutant Hero Turtle flying kites. Don't censor the mind to the confines of adult stereotypes. Think of silly things to make you feel alive, because with all the suffering and fear, the end is nigh. We should at least try and have a good time.
Reigning All Ireland Slam Champion. Next up, please, James Harrington.
Just made up to follow that. It cost a fortune to bring Jerry in here to hecking him. He doesn't know.
And do a free funeral.
It's Mobius magazine. The Strand. Again, I walk alone along the viscous sand and pause to cast a stone beyond the spit of land. A stretch of evening beach that curlews lonesome call, the lack of empty speech as scented shadows fall. And at low tide the feel of sponge between my toes and green crabs gently steal beneath their seaweed clothes. A splash, you spin, too late you'll spot concentric rings, perhaps a buoyant skate beyond low water springs. Vacated moorings mark sea's unpredictive mood and seasonal slipway start where dinghy folk had queued. Steep ledge of rocky dome where free range mussels grab in freehold shelly home the furtive hermit crab. Shy bait compressed and dread cul-de-sac dismay, 180 turn instead leaves room to get away. A dainty wader bird, his rapier stabbed so quick, to a gull he looks absurd, she's yet to learn his trick. Mature, peer heads concealed, reversed inside his cave, the razor to the lean, I did have one close shave. Small fjord of magic spells, the final waves refrain, assorted layers of shells, sluice well beyond the stain. A sconce of seascape sun, shards squinting to and fro, his opaque prisms run their pyrotechnic show. Inside the harbour's mouth, a brace of rocks portray the danger all about, unlit till break of day.
Thank you very much. And next up we have Colm Scully.
Years ago, I was in a writers group in Cork called North Sea Writers, and there was a chap who wrote a beautiful poem about his trip to a bookshop the Lee bookstore, if anyone remembers it.
Oh, yes.
And the keys there, it's long gone now, but it was very Dickensian, old-fashioned bookshop, and it was a beautiful poem, and at the time I can't remember any of the poem or any of the words, and I never saw it printed, it was never printed, but it was a beautiful poem, and I wrote this poem about it, and I suppose it's about all the poems that, you know, the lovely poems that were written by people that are forgotten. A poem remembered. Between these keys, a bookstore once overflowed its surplus of frayed and fretted book spines. Its fusty, cluttered causeways captured in urbane verses. I hear the author's voice rummaging with the owner. The thud and spring of book piles, a search for Rousseau's letters. The banter between strangers, amid the dusty sparkle of sunsets across shelves. Recycling at the counter. Does anyone else remember his long forgotten poem?
Do we have Max Creedon in the room?
Oh, yes. I tried to write an improv song lately, last night, so I hope you give me a little bit anyway. But I did see a film that I loved, The Hole by Donal Kelleher, and the footage was drone footage of a place I'm very familiar with, the Maltby Woods, and I struck that the fir trees go so vertically high, but from the swan's view they were just like little snowflakes, crystals, like crystals. So I did a piece of art, and this is obviously what's my version of improv about what it was about. So, in the Mull's green woods they walked before night. She gazed up through a canopy of prickly lace in the evening light. Through the darkest fear that spears through the sky, through the dappled chinks of the ravine light, she sees the swan flight. What do they see when they look down at me? They see emerald crystals, a forest snowflake fall softly. And they fly to Schlieff and the Hammer Curl, like Leila she sings Oliet, her last love song. Breezy McCree, soon we two will be gone, and we rise to the light as we sing our last swan song. In the mulberry woods they walked before night, where the jaybirds were snug and the oak trees were silent, where the moss was so soft as they lay on their bed, entwined in each other, in fermata they sang their lied. In the mulberry woods they walked in the night.
Next up we have Chris Harlos.
Hello, I'm visiting from the US and I have a poem to share tonight, but I feel like you would appreciate it better if I could just give you a tiny bit of context. I'm writing an epic novel about an early republic in America. And I've composed a novel which is a circadian novel, which happens all in one day, within a 24-hour period like Ulysses. But mine is 12 hours. And it's on March 22nd of 1820. It's a historical novel, because what happened was a very famous American naval captain was in a duel, and his name is Stephen Decatur. And he was shot at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he died at 9 o'clock that night. So he lived for 12 hours in his day, his last day. And the thing was, he was so popular and had won prize money during the War of 1812, and he built this beautiful mansion directly across the street from the White House. And he was personal friends with James Monroe and all the, he was the president at the time, and all famous people. And so he was like the first real American superstar celebrity hero. And he got into this duel with another naval officer. And dueling was kind of an epidemic at the time, because between 1800 and 1850, there were 89 duels just among naval officers in the United States. So anyway, this novel that I'm just finishing is called Honor is the Subject of My Story. And that, if you are familiar, comes from Julius Caesar, scene 2 of Act 1, when Cassius is recruiting Brutus to his conspiracy. And it turns out that this duel was something of a conspiracy. So, one other thing I have to tell you is that at the same time of this 1820, there was this thing called the American Colonization Society, in which ships were being sent back to Africa with free people of color. Honor is the subject of my story. Invocation. Sing, Calliope, archival angel. From your trove of tender missives springs verse for our song of honor misbegotten. A new republic, still but a babe in the wilderness, fist clenched, arms flailing in a quicksand of coy sultans, days and bays. Sound the watch cry, free trade and sailors' rights, and custom, tribute, piracy, and outrage. Treaties broken, signed anew, flags ablaze, a captured crew beguiled. A lover's catch glows hot beneath the muted firmament. Impressments, searches, seizures, quick broadsides, voices wailing for swift retribution. While slave ships with their forsaken cargo sailed, scourge of nations, the bastinado spits encomia to naked servitude. That albatross, in whose name northern coffers in surfeits swelled, a nation blessed beyond a veil of tears. America, God shed its grace on thee. Honor to thy captives. The ship Lisbeth at Cherbourg Bay lies still, filled with faith, hope, and charity. Christian prayers for the wretched heathen so in need of redemption at the hands of cousins from America bolstered by goodwill, many of whom soon perished gravely ill before their great mission could they fulfill. Octavia, the young housekeeper, wished to join, but still waited upon the Lord. While on that day in the Valley of Chance, our bright hymn to honor dripped crimson red. A forgotten code of forgotten men whose wives were left to weep alone, weeping. And thus it was with Susan Decatur, her dreams destroyed in one single hot flash without mercy. The name Honor made flesh. In that day, round about their parkside home, the district gathered, worried, wondering of a life without the brave Decatur. The Yankee Achilles, wily and cunning, whose cutlass gleamed bright at Tripoli Bay, who wrested peace from Algerian kings, but also a man in love with the duel. On summer's morn, with sweet lilacs in bloom. At noon bell at St. John's told the sad tale. Weep, Columbia, Achilles lay still. O tragedy, O wretched spectacle, whose awful scenes that day cannot but show 10,000 tears that bear our inward woe.
Thank you very much, and welcome all the way from the States there. And next up we have Philip Splann.
Oh. advance equality an abstract from the Moths. No, advance equality an abstract from the Moths mythology told by Nox, first human, the invention of the light bulb. That's a whole mythology I'm working on and trying to get back to. I'm crazy. Thank you. Lovely. Love you too. Bat's equality. Moths suckle nectar from the sky. We echo webs to catch moths to our lips. The light bulbs consumes us in its eye. The moths buds from the portal of a light bulb. And that's a circle of life, and we equally clap. When the nectar sky adorns a coat of navy leather, we leave our home and sow sonic waves into maps. I perceive sound waves as you see colors. I hear them curve around the lands and the moons. I swoon in beaches of vibrating raisins, resonating as everything claps, everything claps, everything claps, everything claps. As you light bulbs may object and objectify your souls, we clap ours into existence. As at day, when the nectar sky becomes a honey spread, we collect ourselves and clap our souls to the same chord. And if a bat has no wings or cannot fly, we clap to its heartbeat. With the moths and the light bulbs in mind, as we all have souls and sounds, we can all clap equally. Thank you.
So next up, Cédric Picon.
How good or bad are we? Should I do something very short?
Very short.
No, no, how many are left?
There is
two more of us.
Okay, I'll try.
Awakening from the end. The whole setup is made of screens, poorly strung together. A few processing units with their keyboards and the battery connected to the lock. Marta is recording frantically, both on a paper notebook she holds open in her left hand while tapping on various keys. She is muttering to herself. From time to time, one of her guides wanders back into the cave and attempts a conversation. She is dizzy. Still too dizzy from her long crave sleep for idle chat with those random people who woke her up. They keep checking on her from the corner of the eye. They know she's no threat. She's not the first person they have retrieved from the buzzing sarcophagus. And hopefully, she's not the last. She did not know that fact, and her numbed out with overwhelmed wits would not be enough. She, however, is the first to be so active and quickly driven to work, analyze, study, more eagerly than breathing and living again. There is no light in this cave, except for the glare of the screens and a few lights accompanying the one cable pulling from the improvised workstation into the darkness. She types away, mutters and groans. This time, the guide who comes to her is a woman. Marta notices, but does not heed, until the warm hand on her shoulder interrupts her train of thoughts. The slender figure, with a rather dark skin and hair, abnormally clear eyes, leans over and gives her a concerned look. She gestures something, possibly the sign that their stay must be shortened for safety. Marta turns her pale face back to her and nods. The damp air of the underground triggers a shiver down her spine. The guide,
unties the fabric around her hips and offers it. Marta offers a graceful head tilt, spins over to one of the keyboards. A blinking sign disappears at the end of a strobe of keystrokes. A quake from the ground follows. She grabs a bag, flips a switch, leaving the station to turn off as she walks away. The new darkness hides her smile to the guard. This word will not remain so strange.
Thanks very much. Next one, we have Amy Gurlitt.
This one for the 5-word challenge last week for the online one. I forgot to finish it. Here it is. I wish the world was upside down. Come, join me in the upside down, where the sun rises in the west and consumes the moon in the east. Come with me to this strange place, and your heart will move to the other side of your chest, beating only once in a year. Come over and upside down to taste your courage on her lips, feel it linger until dusk, when the moon is being swallowed. Come to the side, down under where bees pollinate the souls of all of us. And tears run down your cheeks like golden honey, cry from eyes with octagonic iris and love from your belly. And your laughter will shake the sky until it rips open, bursting bubbles will float from the sky. Like rain falling at snail's pace, never breaking. Come, just come, we are upside down, and at the bottom of your wine glass you will find sediments of blue. Swipe it up with your finger and travel it along your tongue. Now you will only ever speak true.
Thank you very much. And the next person on the open mic is Kieran McCarson, please.
Thanks, sir. It's called I wish someone I could rely on. They woke on their pillow. It was feather soft. They were handed their iPhone with their breakfast. They were driven to school. They were given knowledge. They finished school. They went to college. They said, I wish I was someone I could rely on. They woke on their pillow, it was feather soft. Their mother paid a visit, said, look what I got. Said, baby, would you like it? And baby, if not, is there anything that you want? I wish I was someone I could rely on. They woke on their pillow, it was feather soft. They went to their father's wardrobe, said, look what I got. Said, daddy, look at me. Don't I look like you? He handed him some money, said, son, now you do. I wish I was someone I could rely on. I wish I was someone I could rely on. They woke was feather soft. They tried to act on impulse, but sadly could not. Where do I play my part? Mother, father, where does it start? How do I stay in touch when we have much too much? I wish I was someone I could rely on. I wish I was someone I could rely on.
Thanks very much. This brings us to the end of the list already. We have some little time left. If there's anyone in the room who would like to contribute another piece before we round us out, so I assume Cahill might get ready there. Lovely. Cahill Holden.
Lovely. Yo, so this is very spontaneous. Let me just have a quick look through this. What have I got? Sorry, well, this good. It's great. Don't worry.
Mary Poppins
is back. Hey, so I've been writing a short story. It's called Bird Boy. Let's read you the first couple of paragraphs. I first noticed I was growing wings the day the star fell on the schoolhouse. They were nothing then but two nubs under the skin of my shoulder blades, and I worried them with my fingers and wondered what they were. I got a strange feeling then. It was like the world had changed while I was sleeping. My first life had slipped off without bothering to say goodbye. Some days the pack of us would wander in the city, even though it wasn't safe. We would visit the neighborhoods we had lived in, and stand in the places where our bedrooms used to be, and march to the kitchen pretending to be our parents. I would do my father's voice, our brother Zenos would do our mother's, we would all do our old neighbors from the street. We would wave imaginary teacups, pretend to be Fat Abby, spitting and swearing and laughing like a hubble bubble. Sometimes we would find food and useful things, bring them back with us. More often we would roam, feral and dusty, listening to the sky falling too close. Once, we found a box with two cigarettes. We had no matches, so we followed a stack of smoke and lit the cigarettes off the porch of a building that was still burning, one that must have been hit the night before. The heat was strong. We had to run right up to the fire, light them quickly, then run out again before our faces burned. A few streets away, we sat down and passed them round. One went out, we lit it again off the other one, and we run pretended to be Fat Ali and said something obscene about the baker's wife, something he'd heard somewhere probably, and we laughed until our eyes welled up, my chest hurt, but not from smoking. So after one of those wandering days, I showed Zenos my wings. Not the cigarettes day, another one. The feathers were sticking out from my skin now, and they were light brown and soft like a newborn donkey's hooves. And Zenos touched them and said, I wonder what color they will be. I said, don't be stupid, they're brown. They've stayed brown. Sometimes I think that if I hadn't said that, I would not have two brown wings, have colorful wings like a sunbird. But I did, and I do, and I don't. He asked me if I could fly. I told him he was stupid, only new feathers. When they grow, he said, will you fly away? I told him I didn't know. My voice changed when I said it. Then we were crying and he asked me if he could come with me. I knew it was impossible, but I told him I would try. We'd have to hold on tight. He said we might have to stop on the way when I got tired. Where will we go? He asked me. I told him we would go somewhere far away where the stars weren't falling. Somewhere we could go to school and eat anything we liked, even buy a whole packet of cigarettes if we wanted to. Before we went to sleep, I read to him from the Q to T book about qualia and quantum and quartz and quasars, which are like stars, except that they don't fall and stay up in the sky very far away. My father used to say that they were not stars, but bombs. that they were sent here on purpose. But then one fell at my cousin's house while my mother was visiting. He said that a star had come and taken her. The stars have been falling since I was small, which is a long time.
Thank you so much, and I'm going to take the freedom of rounding up the open mic myself with a piece that has just been published on Poet Heads, and I've been taken up as an Irish contemporary poet. So I feel very honoured, and I'm going to do this one here. We are receivers, staring into the night, eyes fixed hard on the bridge in the dim light, until the mind cannot understand the image any longer. Repeating a word, repeat, repeat, so often that to the ear it loses its meaning, becoming a mantra of higher consciousness. Chanting the Om until we rise from lightless night, benighted mind filling until it glow with the potential that is the eternal light. Seeing the ocean of love, and the breath halts, the heart spreads its wings, and the tongue knows no words. We are receivers of a brighter light than our eye can ever see, nor our mind can ever conceive, but our hearts can feel. Quiet I stand in the stillness of the divine, the brightness of love, the silence of awe. Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for coming out tonight. Give another huge applause to Owen Ryan as well as Paul. And to yourselves, everybody did wonderful.